They did not give us any hope. There's not a lot of research. It normally doesn't turn out well when you have triple negative. You're probably not going to make it through this. That's kind of what we were left with.
Did they ever give you an option for treatments?
Everything shows that if you opt to not have chemo and not have the shit thrown at you, you don't make it. I did not want to be alive. I just didn't want to live a life like that. So my husband made the call to our oncologist and said, she's done. She's not going to come back. I was back in the room waiting and the surgeon came in and he's like, literally, you're our walking miracle. It's completely gone.
Did it ever cross your mind, what if cancer was your wake-up call and not your ending?
You're never going to be the person that you were prior to that diagnosis. I'm not, but I am a 100% better person. I learned through all of this that we hold traumas in our body. It is 100% your mindset.
What would you say now to someone who's going through this and whose mindset just isn't that strong right now?
I would definitely say,
hello, friends. Welcome back to Cancer Proof Living. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Michelle, an 8-year non-Hodgkin's cancer survivor, a mom, and a certified integrative nutrition health coach. After cancer, I wanted the healing roadmap that I couldn't find. Now I guide survivors and cancer-conscious humans to detox, rebuild, and thrive. You guys, today's episode is so amazing. It's raw, it's inspirational, and it's for anyone that has been touched by cancer. I sit down with Tanya Agostino, and we talk about things that no one tells you after cancer. And what if cancer was your wake-up call and not your ending? Tanya shares how she didn't just survive cancer, but built a movement from it. Tanya is the passionate founder of Unstoppable Joy. Inspired by her journey through triple negative breast cancer, Tanya created this foundation to bring light and hope to cancer warriors and their caregivers. With a unique blend of legal expertise and entrepreneurial experience as a former restaurant owner, Tanya possesses the vision and skills to lead Unstoppable Joy to new heights. Her mission is clear: to extend a hand of support and care to those navigating the challenges of cancer, reaching individuals and families nationwide with impactful programs and services. You guys, you have to share this episode with somebody who has been touched by cancer. They will learn about the most incredible free services for any caregiver, cancer patient, or survivor. It's fantastic. So let's grab a pen and paper and let's get into it. Hi, Tanya.
Hi.
One of my most favorite people in the world is a guest today. You guys, this is it's going to be such a good podcast because it's really about turning like pain to purpose. And Tanya's story is it's so inspirational, but what she has done about her circumstances is what is really inspirational. And it will help every single person listening out there. So make sure you tune in and like listen to what she does, what her organization's about, and how it helps people, because I promise you it's going to help either you or somebody in your friends or family circle. Okay. So let's get started. Tanya, I know you don't like talking about your story, and I'm going to make you take us back a little bit. But before we get started with your cancer story and how you found it and all of those things, tell me what your life was like leading up to cancer, say like 2 years prior to cancer. What did life look like? What were you doing? Who were you?
Gosh. Well, I mean, I was, I think like everyone, like you're just living, I felt like I was living, I wouldn't say my best life. It was a stressful time. We owned a very successful restaurant here in our area, and we were working a lot of hours. I had had our first grandchild at the time. And so like all good things were happening, but you're just like going through the life's motions and living life. And at some point, yes, we're going to have a guest during the day.
Your co-host.
Yeah. I mean, part of me, you know how inside you always are like, something just doesn't feel right. And I kept bringing it to our doctor's attention, who I was friends with at the time. And he's like, you're just working a lot of hours. That's it. Try to rest. Well, if anyone is in the restaurant business, they know that's absolutely not possible. And so I was just, you know, chugging along, going through the motions, and just felt like I had to really have to push and figure out what was wrong with me. I had just wasn't feeling right. And so kept pressuring them to do tests. And then anyways, I found it. I found a lump.
Wait, so before, did you just have a gut intuition that something was off? Or were you having certain symptoms that were like, okay, this is weird. Why is this happening?
I think I had bronchitis for, it seemed like for forever. And then we had went to Italy. My husband's family, he's from Italy. And so we went back. We had closed the restaurant like in the month of January because here we live in a tourist area. And we went back to visit family and I had like a little bit of a break. So I was starting to feel better. But then when we came back, our customers were like, gosh, you still have that cough. Like it's there. And so I kept going back to the doctor. But when I went back, I'm like, you know, maybe check my hormone levels. And he's like, absolutely not. Like you're too young to be even premenopausal. And I'm like, just for the hell of it, could you just check them, you know, just to see? Because
how old were you?
I mean, 40. I mean, I was not young, but not old, like 40, 45. Anyway, it came back that my cortisol level was very high. And he's like, that's very concerning. Like the number was off the charts high. And he just associated it with the fact that I was working a lot of hours and, you know, not being able to really take time. And then 2 weeks later, I found this lump. I was in the shower and I found a lump and called him. And right away, I was put on the, you know, I like to call it the conveyor belt of now you're in this world, and had a mammogram, had a biopsy, all the things. And it came back that at the very beginning, it was our surgeon called and said, look, it's cancer, but it's not a bad cancer. And we're going to be able to go in and get it out and nothing. You're not going to have any treatment. Like, I think we're going to be one and done. Okay. Two, a week later, getting a separate phone call that said, you know, can you guys meet me in my office? And we went into the office and he said,
oh, it's the call that nobody wants. You're going to have to come in, get come in the office. I remember my oncologist was like, there was only one seat for a patient in her office. And it was me and my husband. And she was like, you might want to grab another chair. I was like, shit, here it is. It's going down.
Exactly. You already know. Like, you know before you go. It's like, just tell me and let's just get it over with. But anyway, he explained that, you know, he doesn't wish it on anyone, but especially not us. He knew us that, you know, it was triple negative. It was the worst kind. It was, you know, at a high stage. And there's not a lot of research. They, you know, it normally doesn't turn out well when you have triple negative. And I definitely, like, not only was I spiraling in that, because then you're like, you went from like your world of being normal to now you're just, your entire life is consumed with cancer. And so we're learning about, like, we had no family history. So it's like we're learning about all of the things, and everything in our life is now cancer. It's tests, it's doctor's appointments, it's researching, you know. Of course, they tell you stay off Google, and the first thing you do is go on Google. And I was like, I was dead before I even went into the doctor's office. But I also saw, like, my husband was hardcore spiraling. Because, I mean, they did not give us any hope. They basically just said, we're very sorry that, you know, that we have to give you this news. And yeah, I mean, you're probably not going to make it through this. And so that's kind of what we were left with.
Which is kind of shitty, because it's like when you're going into cancer, and this is before you even know that you're going into treatments and everything, your mindset is such a powerful tool.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's like you're setting me up to fail by telling me all the negatives. And maybe they have to like dot their I's and cross their T's and have to do that. But it puts your mindset in such a shitty spot where you're like, great, not only do I have cancer, but it's the worst one yet. And now I'm just apparently going to die because it's so hard and there's no research out there, versus being on the same team and having like a little bit more of a positive experience. But I wanted to ask you, is there, and maybe you don't know the answer to this question, is like there a correlation between high cortisol and lumps or in cancer?
I think in cancer, yeah. I'm not so sure that it's lumps. I think it's just in cancer. I mean, like there's the connection that stress can cause you to have that. And who knew, right? Like, we didn't know that. Now, fast forward, which we'll get into later, of like what we do and how we help people now. But it is all of this falls into line of like what we do now, because it is 100% your mindset. And all the things that not only myself, but my family had to go through when we received this diagnosis has led to where we are now and what we're doing to allow that, to try to help that not be that same journey for another family. Because it is literally, I feel like I'm literally the vision of one conversation can change it from life to death. And that's exactly what happened with me. Like, I wasn't given any hope. Luckily, though, we had a great team behind us. And so I was given like the oncologist and all the things. And what's worse is that COVID had literally just hit. Like, COVID hit, I think, was like February, mid-February. I was diagnosed the very beginning of March. And, you know, our life completely changed from that point on. And so we're going to the doctors and we're seeing all the people. I'm going to the doctors, I should say. My husband was sitting out in the parking lot on video because, you know, no one can go into the doctors with you. It was all on top of that, very lonely and scary because I'm having to go through all of this myself. But anyway, so I started chemo. I did not do well. Every single side effect that you could have, because I had the worst kind that you have to have when you're going through triple negative.
Did they ever give you an option for treatments, or was it like, this is the plan and that?
No, because I asked, because I'm a big wuss. And so I'm like, the easy way out, sign me up for that. Like, that's me. So I was researching, like, what can I do to not have to have any of this happen? And they were right away up front with me and said, like, with other breast cancers and with other cancers, there is sometimes an opportunity to just do holistic routes. But with triple negative, there's absolutely no. Like, every single research, scientific base, everything shows that if you opt to not have chemo and not have like the shit thrown at you, you don't make it.
Because of the type of breast cancer it was.
Right.
You were diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. Clean bill of health at the time, no genetic or family history whatsoever. So when you have this diagnosis put on you and you're hearing the doctors say all of this stuff, like, how did you decide to move forward on your terms? How did you decide you're going to fight it on your own terms when you're already kind of being set up to fail or thinking that there's not like a huge hope out there? How were you able to get into that mindset to even start chemo and all of the things that you went through?
I don't think I ever did, Michelle. I think that, I mean, now looking back, because now what I do now, talking to other people going through it, it's like I realized that my body was in fight or flight mode from the day of diagnosis, from that day sitting in his office, that I was just, you know, I'm either going to like not do anything and not survive, or I'm going to put poison, I mean, in your body and still probably not survive. And so I didn't feel like I really had much of a choice. Like, I know I did, but then you also have your family that they're saying, like, you know, at least do this. Like, don't, you know. So I started treatment, and like I said, I had every single side effect that you could possibly have going through it, and lost my hair. You know, it was very traumatic. I will never forget the day that my husband was sitting out in the parking lot, and they were like, you know, you need to find a wig. And that was a whole, like, that to me was the most traumatic part, because as a woman, like, you lose that feeling of being, of feeling like a woman. You have, you know, hair. I have no eyelashes, no eyebrows, no hair, no nothing.
And for breast cancer patients, you lose your breasts too. And sometimes your ovaries.
Yeah. So you lose everything. Everything that is the norm for everybody. It's like it was stripped away and you didn't sign up for any of it. So it's the shittiest journey that I feel like any person diagnosed with any kind of cancer has to go through, because it's just the unknown, and there's just the way you have to maneuver your life through that. There's nothing there. It's just shitty. There's nowhere else to see, how else to say it.
Yeah. And is your physical appearance like dissipate like that? I remember always thinking too, like you have this image in your head of what a cancer patient looks like, right?
They lost
their hair and everything. And I remember like at least telling myself like, no, like I'm going to do everything I can. I'm not going to be like that. And then you slowly, round after round, see yourself turning into the cancer patient.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't leave my house because I was like, I have no hair. And the wig was like, that was a whole other disaster. So I ended up just wearing a baseball cap through the whole thing. But like, I couldn't eat. I was bedridden for a year. But I will say like, midpoint, I think I was four months into chemo, I said one day, I was watching my husband and my daughter, and I just said, we're not going to do this. Like, I couldn't eat everything. It was just horrible. Everything about our lives was horrible.
And when you say we're not going to do this, you're talking about continue with chemo.
No, I meant yes. And I knew that if I didn't continue with chemo, that it meant that I was basically, saying we're done. And so I called my husband and daughter into the room and said, let's put the families on video and we're going to say goodbyes, because I'm not doing this anymore. It's not that it's not just fair to me, because I'm young and my life has been stripped away from me and I did not sign up for this shit, but neither did them. I mean, like our youngest daughter came home from her doctorate program to help her dad take care of us, but we had to like sell our restaurant at the time. Like, our entire life was stripped away from us. And it's like, you have to figure out what it's going to look like. And they were trying to put on a smile for me to help me push through going through this. But I if you know your family, and everyone knows, like, we all know each other, you know that they're putting on this facade, trying to make you feel positive when they feel, they're going through their own trauma. So for me, I could feel it all, and I just didn't feel like it was a life that I wanted to live.
So it was more for you. It was more of the idea of all of the destruction that cancer brought in your life. It's taken away, obviously, your appearance. It's taken away your energy. It's taken away your family life, your restaurant, like all of the things. It wasn't so much that like the chemo was so tough that you felt like you couldn't continue on with the rounds.
Oh, no, it was both. It was both.
Okay. It was both. So it was all of it.
Yeah. I mean, I was so sick all the time. I mean, my husband was learning how to cook vegan on top of the fact, like, just to try to find something that I could eat, but everything tasted like metal. I did not want to be alive. That is just the honest truth of it. I just didn't want to live a life like that. I every time I looked in the mirror, I was looking at somebody who I didn't know. I was bald. I was sad. I was sick. I'm like, it's just, who is this person? And this is not what I signed up for. It's not what anybody signs up for.
Yeah. The identity completely shifts through cancer. And I think especially in the middle of treatments, when you wake up and you're at the slimmest or sickest part of your life, and you just look so different, and you're just like, who am I? Who is this person? Like, what is going on? And you almost become resentful. Obviously, you become very resentful, very angry.
Oh, I was very angry. 100%.
Did you ever looking back, did you ever think like, God, I hate my body, I'm so resentful, or felt like a sense of betrayal from your body because of the situation you were in?
All the time. I was a very angry person. And I also know that that was probably even more difficult for for my family to have to see, because I mean, I wasn't a nice person. Not that I was mean to them, but I was just not nice in general. I was not happy. I was very angry. It's like grief, you know, you go through the levels of like, you're mad at God. You're like, why did I deserve, like, what did I do to deserve this? I'm a good person. Like, you go through all of those feelings. And at the end of the day, this is what was served to me, and this is what I was going to have to go through, and I needed to either make a decision to give up or put my big girl pants on and tough it through. And so I did not. I decided I wanted to give up. And
so you made that call. You said to your family, you're like, listen, I think this is it. I can't go on anymore. Let's get everyone on FaceTime. Like, what happened next? And like, what was that conversation like?
Well, I mean, they didn't, you know, love it, and they tried to talk me out of it. But at the end of the day, I'm a very, when it came to that, it was ultimately my decision. Like, I don't have to go to chemo. Like, I don't have to do anything. So my husband made the call to our oncologist and said, you know, she's done. She's not going to come back. And he said, have her on the phone at 5:45 when I'm done with my last patient. I want to talk to her. And he's like, okay. And I think at that time, my husband was just like, you know, hoping that maybe he could talk some sense into me. And at the same time, a girlfriend of mine called randomly to check in on me that day. And I told her the same thing. And she's like, no, 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 no. And so she starts making phone calls and calls another friend of hers. Well, it's another friend of ours who's a therapist. And Melissa called me and she's like, look, I'm a friend of yours. And so I can't talk to you, but we're going to would you do this? And so her thought was, you know, would you go and have sound therapy done? And I'm like, I don't know what that is. And she said, so she's describing it to me. And I'm like, look, there is no way that somebody playing sound bowls is going to make me change my mind. Like, it's not going to magically make me be cancer free and make me happy.
You're like, I'm going through chemo. I am dying. I don't want to listen to a sound bowl.
I had no idea what it was. And I was like, no, that's whatever. And between her and Christina, like, they really pushed and encouraged me to at least, you know, try it, because what else did I have to lose? And it was definitely the push and the support that I needed. And so I always say, because I never want to deviate from this, because it falls into my story, is that God definitely stepped in that day more so than he ever had in my life. That it was like, you need to listen, and there's a reason. And I'm going to show you that later on, but this is it. So I went, even though I did not want to, I went. She actually had the sound therapist call me the same day. And she's talking to me on the phone and walking me through all these things. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, great. This is still not going to matter. But we set the day. She's cleared her schedule the following day, and I went in. And then that night as well, my oncologist did call me. And his exact words to me, we laugh about it now, was, you know, you're too damn young to give up. At least give me a fighting chance. You know, if we see that it's not going to work, I will step back and let you make that ultimate decision, but at least give me a fighting chance. And so I went to the sound bath the next day, and it was supposed to be 2 hours. I was there for 4 hours and didn't know this person at all. But whenever I walked out of that room that day, it completely changed my life. It was definitely a game changer for me.
What do you think about it, and it specifically, and was this the first kind of like integrative treatment you did throughout your treatments?
Yes. I mean, besides, like, I was juicing, like, I was doing like the nutrition part of it when I could. Like, nothing tasted great, so I really just didn't eat. But that was the first, like, that intense of holistic that I had done, besides massage. Now, I did have a girlfriend that came to my house and gave me a massage, which was lovely. And I will forever be grateful for that, because that's very important. But yeah, it was the first of that. And I know it was because my body was in fight or flight mode. And it was the first time that my body was allowed to push pause and not think about cancer and not have, it was like, it released it. And it took my body out of that fight or flight mode and it gave it a moment of pause. That's the only way I can describe it.
No, I think that makes total sense. And when you think about like the nervous system, right? And we know we can't heal in a state of fight or flight, but we know when we can get back to that place of rest and digest, when we go into the parasympathetic state of rest and digest, that's when healing can begin. And that's when our nervous system can kind of come down. And don't you feel like when you're like in that state of fight or flight, we're never thinking clearly as much. Like we're more reactive. We're a little bit more emotional versus like when we're in that rest and digest, it's like, okay, what are my options here? You can think from a more rational place. So I wonder, you know, if all of that kind of connected and came together to give you that relief and then also to help give you some motivation and like faith at the end of it too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely wasn't thinking straight. Prior to this, I was, like I said, I was very, very angry and I was very sick. Literally, I was, you know, the sickest I've ever felt. And I didn't feel like my body, like I felt like I was on fire from the chemo that was being pumped into my body. And it was just horrible. It was the worst time literally of my life. And I didn't want to live like that. And even though, like, now I'll give the advice, like, it's temporary, gosh, that's really a hard pill to accept. Even when you're in the midst of it, you're like, really? That's what you're going to tell me? It doesn't matter whether it's temporary because it's ever consuming. And it's what you're living every single day. And you know that I have to go. I have to have the stuff put inside me. I have to have the medicine, you know, before and after. I have to have the side effects. Like, you're going to have it all.
So what would you say now to someone who's going through this and whose mindset just isn't that strong right now? What if they're at their own breaking point like you were? What is the best advice you could give them from your perspective?
Gosh, I would say, look, I said today, I'm not going to get emotional with you on this.
No, let it out. Cry. I love when everyone cries on here because we're talking about hard shit.
I would definitely say, like, you know, it's shitty. The whole aspect of the whole thing is shitty. I know I have to heed from the advice I was given. I mean, give it a fighting chance. Like, you never know. I always feel like there's a reason that some of us, you know, have to go through this. And for whatever reason, you know, for whatever it is, I would just say, like, don't give up. At least fight it. And you'll come out a stronger person on the other end of it.
Yeah. I think, like, when I was in some of my darkest moments, and I think about, like, the mindset that I was in, it really had to come down to blocking out everything. Like, I remember when we would do scans to see if the chemo was working or if the cancer spread. Like, I was probably disassociated myself a little bit, or like being like detached. But it was like, I just couldn't think about it and I couldn't dwell on it and I couldn't be physically or mentally there in those moments because it was so much. Or let's do the echo every week to see if like you're having heart conditions from the chemo. Like, I couldn't be there presently because it was too much, but I had to block out everything around me and just tell myself, just keep going, one foot in front of the other.
But don't you remember, like, did you not feel like you were like, let's just pretend like this isn't happening? You know, like, if you're having it happen.
I had unhealthy ways of dealing. I was working from my hospital bed every single day. I was doing calls. Like, I numbed myself so much. I also feel like I had family around me. For those of you who don't know, I was inpatient. So I was in the hospital for 5 or 6 days at a time for every round that I had. And so I had family with me all the time. And like, Tanya, I give you a lot of credit for like being able to just be angry and be pissed and be mad and like tell your family that. Like, I felt like I kind of had an opposite experience where I could see how worried and scared everyone was. And I was like the compass where they would look at me every day like, is she falling apart? Is she okay? And then that would determine their mood. And then that would determine my day because they're with me in the hospital all day. And so I kind of got to a point where I'm like, I just gotta fake it, like, and just pretend like I got this and I'm strong and this. And I never had a chance to really fall apart until I got to therapy. Like, I was still seeing my therapist, and through therapy I could, like, fall apart, but, like, it was so much stress and so much pressure to even just do that. There is something to be said about the mindset and blocking everything out. Like, even when the doctors were talking about good news or bad news, it was just like tunnel vision of just make it to the next round. Just get there. Just keep going. I can't think about the alternative happening, or else it would have fucking broke me. Like, I could have never mentally gone to, like, wait, it's not working. It's getting worse. Like, it would have broke me. Like, I couldn't hear anything. I didn't want to hear anything. I just had to stay, like, on track. It was my way of, like, controlling the uncontrollable.
Yeah. And I feel like we have the pressure on us, and I'll, especially for a woman, when you're a wife, a mother, we do all the things, right? I mean, we clean the house. We take care of things. We are the people who take care of things, and things get done because of us. And at the same time, like, a man being diagnosed, like, they're working, and they're, you know, they're out there making sure that their families are taken care of. So both sides have the same stress that comes with this, and the pressure of being like, okay, this is changing how my family is acting. And right when this had happened, at the time that I had said, like, I'm going to give up, we were at the restaurant, and we had made the decision, because they were like, it's definitely from stress. You're going to have to sell the restaurant, because I was going from chemo at the very beginning, going from chemo to the restaurant and running that. And I would sleep upstairs in the office, and if the staff needed me, they would come get me. But I remember a day that we said, okay, we're just going to have to put it for sale and get rid of it. And we were at the bar by ourselves, just my husband and I, and he completely broke down. And this was, like, the first time I'd ever seen this from him, from diagnosis to now. And he literally just had a massive fall apart. And he was just like, you can't leave. Like, we've got to figure this out. Like, I don't know how to survive. And that's a lot of pressure. And because in my mind, in my body, I'd already knew that, like, they didn't give me any hope. So I'm probably not going to survive this. How do I prepare my family for, like, after the aftermath? Like, how are they going to be able to function? And I hate to say, like, they're going to function, but it's like, you feel like you don't want to leave them behind, because it's sad. It's just sad for everybody. So yeah, it's horrible.
All of it's so sad. And you're so right. That's such another level of pressure I didn't even think about, because I was not in that position going through cancer, but it's such a, I can't even imagine. That would be such a overwhelming state of pressure that also makes you feel like you have to get it together and, like, fix it. And this, it's like, it's hard. That's a hard position to be in.
Yeah. And that's just it. Like, we always want to fix things. And it wasn't something that I could fix. I couldn't fix it on my own. And you're at the mercy of someone else trying to walk you through, like, this is what you have to do. And there's no exceptions. Like, this is the protocol. This is what you have to do. And I really fought it every step of the way, because I didn't want to do it, but it worked.
And thank God you found sound therapy to give you some relief throughout that.
Yes. After that, so after the sound therapy, I felt like I did go back to chemo, and my oncologist was 100% amazing with me, and made sure that I was going to be good with it. But we talked more in depth about, like, the side effects that I was going through, and, you know, and I did get through it.
I wonder if it gave him something to think about too, just, like, looking back from his perspective, like, how he approaches patients and, like, the mindset, right? Like, I wonder how different your strength would have been during that journey if it was like, hey, listen, don't research this. It doesn't look great, but you are not a statistic. You are an individual that will and can fight this. Like, think about that mindset. And maybe that was, like, a good learning lesson for him to be like,
oh, we talk about this now, which we'll get into.
Should set people up for success versus not, because then it's so much easier for us to crumble under that pressure when things get so hard, because you're already having someone who set the table up for you to fail on a certain level. Not that he would want that in any way, but you know what I mean? Just like how you approach giving that diagnosis to somebody and like how you're teeing up their mindset for it.
Well, which is what part of what we do now. But yes, exactly. Because it literally, and I say this when I speak now to groups, is like that this is the most important thing. It's literally like how you give that diagnosis to a family. But at the same time, like you have to give some hope. You know, it doesn't matter what stage, you have to give them hope, because your words could literally be life or death for that person. You don't know how they're going to react. You don't know how they're going to handle this situation. And so I'm a living example of like words matter.
Yeah. And most people are looking at their oncologist as their northern light in all of this. Like we don't know what you know. So we are looking at you to guide us.
Right. We depend on them to give us that and to walk us through, like, what's this going to look like? And, you know, everyone always says, well, if it was your family, what would you do? But I mean, like, in the end of the day, what are they going to say? We do expect them to walk us through the best that is going to be. And hopefully for everyone that has, you know, it has a good outcome. You know, unfortunately, it doesn't always. And that is truly, truly unfortunate that any family has to go through this.
I know. And I'm so, so glad that you stuck with it and fought through it, because you're such an inspiration at the end of it. How many rounds of chemo did you go through?
I had 6 months of chemo and then took a break and had surgery, and then had a month from surgery. And then I went in and I had 38 rounds of radiation. Like, they had to throw the kitchen sink at me. But the best part was that when I went in for, they were prepping me for surgery. And I mean, again, it's like, they don't tell you everything. Like, oh gosh, I remember I got shingles and I was pissed. I walked into my oncologist office and I was like, he's like, I said, I have this and it's burning, and all I remembered is like my dad had shingles, and I'm not a pain person. So like, I don't want anything that's going to hurt. And he's like, oh yeah, that's a side effect. I was horrible to my oncologist. I was like, well, don't you think that you should have probably said like that was a side effect? I was very angry.
And you're like, if I told you all the side effects, you would die.
Yes. I'm like, tell me all of the side, like they just don't. So same thing, surgery, like, you know, all of the unknowns. And so there was a part of the prepping that I wasn't prepared for, where they're sticking needles and getting you. And I'm like, you know, it's just you're getting hit and hit and hit all the time. And after they prepped me, I was back in the room waiting, and the surgeon came in and he closed the curtain, and it was just he was the only one who allowed my husband in the room with us through this entire thing. This doctor was absolutely amazing, and he always let my husband in with me. So he was back there in the room, and he sat down and he said, Tanya, what have you done? And I said, well, what do you mean, what have I done? And he goes, I just read, like, looked at all, like, they do x-rays and they do an imaging before. And he said, I just looked at that to, you know, make sure we're doing all the things right before we go into surgery. And he said, it's completely gone. And he's like, what did you do? And I said, well, I mean, how much time do you have before we go into surgery? Because like, I did a lot of things. And so he's like, all right, afterwards, we're going to sit down and have a conversation about like what you have done. Because he knew through seeing each other that I was doing a little bit of holistic to try to counteract the side effects that I was having from all of the side effects that I was having. But anyways, he said, I'm going to go in and cut out, you know, where the cancer was, because with the type of diagnosis and the type of cancer you had, it's very aggressive. And so he said, we're going to do that. And then we're still throwing the kitchen sink at you. But he's like, literally, you're our walking miracle. It's completely gone. And fast forward like a month later, I went in to see the doctor for radiation, and he said the same. He's like, look, I'm giving you the most that we give people in this situation because we've never had literally an all clear, you know, triple negative, to not say that you're in remission. Like, it was literally all gone.
Wow. What an app. That's like an incredible blessing. You feel like you have like all the angels and like God on your side. Like, talk about such a turnaround from where you were like 6 months prior, you know? Can you share the things that you were doing throughout treatments that maybe you feel as though helps you get to that place too?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. So my, we'll just go is to the simplest as like my nail beds turned black. I don't know if yours did during chemo, but the type of chemo that I had, my nail beds would turn black. And they had said that you can lose your nails when you're going through this. So I would have manicures. Just basic manicure, someone just taking care of my nails for me. And that did help improve that. When I could, I would have a facial. Again, I was so blessed to have a friend that was in this business. And so she would come and take care of me. But I would have a facial because my face was all flaky and red. And so I would have a facial and that would help to, you know, calm that. My skin was very irritated and inflamed. And so it just helped calm that. And then I did the sound therapy as much as I could because it was literally my jam. Like, my body just loved it. It reacted to it. So as much as I could see this person at the time and she could do sound therapy on me, I did that as much as possible. And then that's kind of all that I did because I still didn't feel good. You know, I would try to get out and push myself to walk more. And, you know, we have two big dogs. And so my husband would say, let's go out and walk on the trail where, you know, there's not a lot of people. And so I felt comfortable to finally get out and, you know, kind of be out a little bit more because I definitely stayed home, not wanting to see anybody and just kind of, yeah, be with that. But so I did all of those things. And then after, when I got the all clear, I really dived into it because I started researching like all the things and some of the things that I knew that I could do and should do. I just didn't feel like going and having them done or, you know, trying that. But I learned that through all of this, that we hold traumas in our body and there's a root cause of why we get sick. And so you have to learn that. And still wasn't in that mindset of like figuring that out. I just was like, okay, I just want to heal and get past this. So then all the things that I did, it just ever evolved. Like it was ever evolving for me to like learn and experiment with all the things that I was researching that I needed to do to help myself heal in the long run.
You know, nobody really gives you a playbook on how to handle a cancer diagnosis. So I'm curious, in your opinion, what would you have done differently throughout your journey looking back now?
Well, what I would have done is exactly what I've done. you know, I've created this and I say I loosely because it's not an I, there's a whole group of people, which you two are involved in it. Like it takes a community to help somebody, but which is what we've created. So we have created a group to help that, and for that reason, because that's what I would have done differently. Like there was no support, the support that you and I both needed, that we have found that helped, was not there. And so now it is there and now we do have that to help other people. But my advice, what I would have done differently, what I would have utilized these services, I would have utilized and done, you know, for the ones like me and you who had to have chemo, I would do the holistic and the treatments at the same time because they complement each other. So the holistic approaches and the services, the self-care services that you can use, they're not just self-care services loosely using. It's like those are a necessity to help our body heal while we're going through the treatments.
And I wish doctors would encourage it more or talk about it more because you're so isolated when you're going through cancer and cancer treatments. And, you know, people talk about like massages and stuff, but no one's really talking about other holistic things that can really help throughout the cancer journey. And it really And I know that it's not the doctor's thing. They don't believe in it. There's no research, blah, blah, blah. But there are therapeutic services that can help. So for you, tell me about your transition from being a cancer patient into becoming a cancer survivor and how life was different after that.
Well, afterwards, I rang the bell on New Year's Eve, and I can remember thinking, like, great, we're done. We're never going to speak of cancer again. We're going to, like, we're going to go on our life, and we're going to have a great party. Like, if COVID was, you know, coming to as much of an end, people were able to travel. So, like, my parents were able to travel up, and we spent New Year's together. And even though my mom couldn't go in with me when I rang the bell, no one could. Again, you know, mask, all the things. She was in the car, and when we got home, we had a lovely New Year's Eve party. And so for me, it's like nice because New Year's is always that moment of like a double celebration.
Double celebration, new beginning on a completely different level.
Absolutely. And so then it was like, I think after that, I thought, okay, we're not going to talk about it ever again. But that's not what happened. I still did like the self-care. Like I was doing yoga because I was trying to recuperate still from surgery. And so I was doing my things, meditating. I was learning how to do these things. But then it was forefront in my brain that like I needed to put into action what I had been researching and like what caused this. And how I can become a better person and not fall back into old habits. And that was like, I needed to kind of look in. And that is extremely hard for most of us to do.
So hard to break old patterns. It is. You're literally retraining your brain, retraining all your patterns. Like, and it's hard when you don't have something to replace that with, or you don't know, or you're trying to figure it out. Did your doctors ever help you with like the healing and recovery piece? Where did they give you advice on like rebuilding the body and your health and immunity and gut? Like, did you have those tools at your fingertips? And did you struggle through that?
No. Yes, I struggled through it. Not so much. Like no, I didn't have any of that. It was basically like, you know, congratulations, you're done. Here you are. You know, and it's like,
see in 3 months.
Yeah, see you for your checkup. And so I started doing the things, but then I started like really looking in, and I touch on that specifically because I feel like we don't talk, because sometimes you don't talk about all the things because they're not in your mind. Like you think, oh, maybe I have trauma from family, or I have trauma from like, who knows? It's not in the forefront of your mind every day. So some people don't realize that that's still an issue.
Or that it's even connected to our health.
Absolutely. And so, but when you realize it is, which I did, and so I thought, okay. And so I luckily had people at different times in my, at that time, reach out and say, hey, I think I should, I'm like kind of feeling like I should work with you for this reason or work with you for that reason. And I'm like, okay. And so I had a person who reached out and said, I feel like I should teach you how to meditate. And I'm like, okay. So I started doing that.
These people would just randomly reach out to you and be like, hey, I just feel like I need to help you. That is so wild. Like, is this all happening in Ocean City, Maryland? Because it did not happen in Chicago, Illinois. Nobody checked in on me saying, hey, I want to help you. They were like, you're all good now. You ring the bell. You're good, right? And I'm like, no.
I know, which is why I definitely know that there was a
divine intervention.
Yeah. There's a purpose for it.
Wow. That's honestly, I think that is the biggest sign I've ever seen of divine intervention, because people get nudges. My clients talk about this all the time. Like, you know, I kept getting nudges to get a colonoscopy. I kept getting nudges to get my mammogram, or I just kind of, I don't know, I had this feeling, or I had a nudge, or like I came across you and like you went through this. Like it was kind of a nudge. Like I feel like the universe, God, whatever the hell you believe in, works in mysterious ways and gives us nudges or gut intuitions, or gives other people those same things when you're supposed to be in each other's lives and when you're supposed to help. And I guess I wonder, like, did you ever, or did it ever cross your mind that, like, what if cancer was your wake-up call and not your ending?
Oh, yes. Now, especially. And now, especially, I 100% know it was, because I am not the person that I was. And that's important for everyone to know that's going through this, is that you're never going to be the person that you were prior to that diagnosis. And so I'm not, but I am a 100% better person. Do I still have flaws? Am I still flawed? Yes, we're all flawed. Do I still have a lot to learn? Yes. And every day I am doing something that I need to do for my own self, but I've also learned a lot. I've looked inward and I've done a lot of inward work to heal my own traumas and to heal things that I need to go through. And so, but yes, I definitely felt like it was a humbling moment that I probably needed, a moment to say like, hey, you're not going on the life's path that was laid out for you. And so here it is. And not everybody gets that. I get that. And not everybody probably listens. I fought against it, definitely. But now I do see that and I do know that. And I'm trying to do exactly what I'm supposed to do with it. And that's still not easy to do. But I do.
I don't think anything good is easy or worth it is easy, to be honest. But I do agree with you. Like, you make your experience what you can with it, you know. And I remember so many times, like, I was so frustrated after cancer and just not being able to heal, not being able to recover. And like, I really had bad, like, self-identity issues. Like, I loved who I was before cancer. I didn't like who I was during cancer, and I did not know who I was after cancer. And it was so difficult to move forward. You feel lost, but I also felt like I can't go back to the career that I was in. Like, I was so stressed out. It put me in the worst situation. But I also feel like I'm a different person and I outgrew it. Like, what do I do now? And then it was like, gosh, like, I lost a lot of my friends because they turned out to not show up when the chips were down.
That's a whole conversation.
Exactly. It's a whole other thing. And it's like, you realize like your whole community and you are so different. And then everyone around you expects you to be the same. And it's really difficult. And like, no one's there to guide you or tell you, hey, like, you can find your purpose again. You can find your joy again and like figure it out. So I really, really struggled through recovery. And I remember there were so many times where I was like asking my doctor, like, my gut's not working. Like, it wasn't even my gut. I didn't even call it the gut. I called it my stomach. My stomach's not working and I'm exhausted. And
now we use the fancy terminology, but back then we did not.
And like, I have brain fog. I know it's brain fog, like all of these things. And there was no help and no resources. And so when I started to work through it, it really like, call it God, call it the universe, call it whatever you want. I was like, oh, I know what I'm meant to do. I know I am on the other side of this. And it makes total sense. Now I get like a little emotional thinking about that because, you know, sometimes you have to grow through it to get to the other side. And it's not like you ring the bell and then you like figure out why you went through something. Like, this is years and years of hard work, of inward work, of really figuring out the root cause, of really understanding how the body, like for me, like I had to go through so much, but I was like, okay, I know I'm here to help other people go through this because there's no support. And I was never one of those people that was like, I'm going to go to the support group and sit in a circle with a bunch of like, and no offense, but like when I was diagnosed 8 years ago, I was 32 and it was more still considered like a quote unquote old person's disease. So like, I'm the youngest one. These people don't know what I'm going through. That just wasn't my jam. So it was like, I need to create like what didn't exist, because who hasn't been touched by cancer? And this is crazy. Like, we shouldn't have to struggle. And I know that's how you felt and how you feel about patients and going through treatments when you're in those like shitty, dark moments, when you don't have, when doctors are not giving you the resources and you're like, something has to give. I need some relief, or I need to feel differently in some way. And it's kind of how we've turned our pain into purpose. And so tell me about how you started the nonprofit foundation, Unstoppable Joy. How that got started for you?
Well, it definitely wasn't my choice.
And like, when did you feel that like higher calling? Like, when were you like, okay, this is cool?
So after I rang the bell, I will say that at nighttime, I would have thoughts like, you know how like everything always comes to you at nighttime? Well, for me, it does at least. And so there was like several dreams that I would have, like, I would hear like, oh, you know, this would be you have this voice and you should do this because this, you know, like it was just there. I can't really describe it. It was so awkward for me to like in my dreams feel like I was being led to do something more, because it sounds strange. It just sounds like, oh yeah, sure.
Oh, I don't think it sounds strange at all. I don't think it sounds strange at all. I know it's hard to describe, but I don't think it's strange. Yeah.
Yeah. And so and back to what you were saying, like you're just trying to figure out your life after cancer. And so like we had a restaurant, that was my life. So prior to that, I worked in the legal field. And so I thought, well, okay, I mean, I want to go to work. I want to feel like a normal human being again. So I've got a job working at one of the law offices in our area, and thinking like this was going to be my life. And I got a phone call from our CPA, who was our CPA for the restaurant that we had. And he's like, you know, he always called and checked up on me, but he was like, hey, you know, we kind of watched you go through this. And he's like, I think you should do something with this. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I think maybe you should think about having a nonprofit. I'm like, no, 100% no. I'm like, I'm not a big nonprofit person, because you just never know. Like, you hear the stories. And I said, plus it's going to take me out of every single comfort zone of mine. Like, I'm not a public speaker. I'm not going to ask people for money. I know nothing about the nonprofit world. And he's like, you've been a paralegal for like X amount, you know, forever. Like, you can figure this out. I'm like, not doing it.
Were you already talking to service providers and stuff? Like, when he called you and he was like, hey, you should do this, like, how did he know what was he talking about?
No, because we had been, he just, like, we were friends. And so he, you know, was taking care of all of our finances from our business while I was going through this. So we talked every week. So no, just once he realized that everything was okay with me, he just on a random check-in call, you know, he just mentioned this, and he's like, well, okay, well, just think about it. And I'm like, okay.
Think about starting a nonprofit.
Yeah. And then he's like, you know, just think, I just think that you should be doing something with it. And he's like, I just felt like I was supposed to call you and tell you this. And I'm like, okay, you know, crazy, whatever. And then a couple of weeks later, I get an email from another law office in our town. And she's like, hey, you know, somebody told me that you had had cancer and that you had just been diagnosed. And she was a breast cancer survivor. And she's like, you know, maybe we can talk. And then she's like, plus, I heard that you wanted to start a nonprofit. And I'm like, not at any time did those words come out of my mouth. Like, no. And she's like, just, would you come in and meet with me? Would you come in and meet with me? Come up with a name. Like, let's humor us and get it started. Because she was like, so-and-so told me that you, and it was him, you know, he had called because they was somebody that he works with.
It was literally being forced upon you whether you wanted to do it or not.
So I went in and she started it for me. And she's like, look, if you don't do anything with it in a year, we'll close it. No harm done. And I'm like, okay. So I went home and I remember thinking, like, they have lost their minds. Like, I am just not doing any of this because I don't know anything about this world. And kind of sat there. And, you know, a week later, I got a phone call from somebody in our community and they said, did you just start a nonprofit? And I'm like, kind of, why? I was almost afraid to answer the question. And they're like, we have a check for you for $10,000 to get you started. What else do you need? And at that moment, I literally like looked up to the sky and was like, you have such a funny sense of humor. Like, this is not at all what I want to do. And I really, really fought against it. But at the same time, inward, I felt that nudge. Like, I felt him really trying to push me to, like, so still didn't do anything with it for a bit. Like, I sat there, but I remember weeks following that, like I would, through meditation, sit and I would pray about like, what is it that you're trying to get me to do? Like, I don't know anything about this world, so I'm researching and I'm not liking what I'm seeing. Like, it's, you know, again, it's going to take me out of every comfort zone. But most importantly, what you're asking me to do is talk about cancer and having to share the most traumatic time of my life daily. And I'm not doing that, period. And I went to bed one night and I just had a very peaceful dream and a very peaceful sleep. And I woke up to, I'm going to have a nonprofit. And I remember having this conversation with my husband and he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what this is going to look like, but I know I'm supposed to do it. Everything is leading me to this. He did not want to do it because, again, it's like we're very private people. We did not want, you know, to have to talk about this all the time. And so, but I knew that I wanted it to be different than any other organization out there. And so that's kind of how I created it. It's very community-based. And we partner with the exact same people that help you while you're going through this. So everything holistic. So it's all self-care. So it's, you know, nutrition, it's reflexology, it's massages, it's spas, wellness centers, acupuncturists, chiropractors, therapists, you name it, we have it. Everything that a family would need while they're going through this. And so we have a protocol with our providers. We don't expect them to do it for free because they're a business and they have, you know, that business to sustain their own families. So it's a partnership and we pay them a portion, and then the other portion is donated from them, but it's for our warriors and caregivers. And we say warriors because, as you know, you have to be a warrior when you're going through this. It's a free service that we offer them. And then we follow our families through the warriors 3 years to survivorship. And then after that, we have a path to prevention program that our same providers work, but it's different protocol at that point. And then we push them into that because what we're basically trying to teach them is, look, don't fall back into old habits. All the things that we've learned, like there's a root cause. So let's get into that. Let's help you look inward when you're ready and when you feel comfortable to do that. So they're able to have like massages and manicures and like lymphatic and therapist and all the things. But at the same time, we also do guide them into grief support and therapies to like help them look inward and find the root cause of why they got this. But not only for the person diagnosed, but also for their caregiver, because as we know, it affects the entire family. And so that's exactly what we do.
Yeah. So yeah, I was going to say, so tell everybody like who you provide services to. So the foundation is Unstoppable Joy. So they provide the services, this integrative services to 3 different groups of people.
Yep. So we, it's for adults, children, and animals battling any kind of cancer. And our animal program is our newest program, and it's fairly dear to me. It's called Noah, and it's named after our little Shih Tzu that we had, but it's nurturing our animals with healing. And so there's a lot of moving parts to our organization, but one of the services that we have are healing bags. Because I'm a very strong, this is like the first foremost of when I speak, is that we are a cancer organization, but we are nothing about cancer. It is everything positive and uplifting, because you have to be positive or have positive support around you when you're going through this. And so everything with us is that. So our healing bags, again, nothing about cancer. And they're all very natural and supportive items that are in the bag. And we have cream color for our women and children, navy for our men, and red for the animals. And the ones for our people, for our humans, they go to the cancer centers throughout the United States. And the from ones for the animals go to the veterinarian clinics.
And you guys, the one thing I love about Unstoppable Joy, and I also do work with them too, because I love their mission and it's absolutely fantastic. And I really wish I had it when I was going through treatments. But what's really great about them is that they're national. So anywhere you are in the country, you can get free services, massages, like she said, therapy, sound baths, sound therapy, red light, facials, like whatever, anything that's going to make you feel good. This is for cancer patients, if you're actively in a diagnosis, and when you are a cancer patient, that's when you get those healing bags from wherever you're getting treatments from, for caregivers and for cancer survivors. There is not a nonprofit organization out there that gives a shit about caregivers. I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it. And because I was a caregiver to my mom before my diagnosis, like, I know the mental and emotional stress that is and how hard it is and how much caregivers need to be taken care of as well. So it's such a cool organization because it's this like trifecta. You get the caregivers get help, the survivors get help, the warriors get help, meaning the patients. And then it also serves animals too that need help. So it's so amazing. I feel like if more people knew about it, it would just be insane.
Well, it's grown. It continues to grow. But the most important thing is that we take care of the here and now. Like, you know, we're not, not to like diss, because research is very important. We have our own research department that that would be, you know, Michelle does, you do that for us. Like, there's a reason, there's a rhyme and reason. Like, you need to know, like, why these services support the regimens that they go through, the treatments. So like there is a reason, and we need to have research for sure. But you also, the importance is that somebody is taking care of the here and now. So we take care of them before, beginning, and after, and or during, I should say, not the beginning, during and after. But we take care of them as a whole, mind, body, and spirit, because they all coincide and are a huge part of our healing journey. And yes, we have grown, and it continues to grow, and it
helps so many people. And it's like, when I think back about your story, Tanya, when you're like in the darkest moments, you know, there's so many people out there right now that are in their darkest moments that can lean into these services, that can, you know, help regulate their nervous system so they can think clearly, you know, all the things that we need, but we don't know that we need. And it helps just enormously. The impact is so big.
And I do, not that I want to, you know, pressure, because the world that we live in, it's ever changing. And especially right now, it's not the greatest of times. But cancer affects every single person, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And so with us, like, it is very important that we are giving a more positive, as much as we can, journey for a family going through a situation that you and I have walked. And we don't want them to have to go through all of the things that we've went through. And to try to help somebody not have to be in that dark moment is everything to me. And so it's the easiest situation to apply, like to become and to get the services from us. We've made everything as simple and as easy as possible. That being said, all of this doesn't happen without support. And I think that is the hardest thing for me to have to really talk about and express. And I hear this from like our team. It's like, you know, it's easy for me to ask them to do it, but it's hard for me to do it because, again, this is taking me out of a comfort zone of mine. But it is true. Like, I've seen that we've grown. I mean, the organization is just going to hit 5 years this year, and we don't turn anybody away. But at the same time, like, we definitely need the support. Like, every single amount of funds that we get go towards our mission, and we are paying our providers. We're making sure that a family gets that support. And so as much as, you know, we've made it easy, it is very important to know, like, that, you know, we definitely need that support for us to be able to continue to the mission and to help families.
For sure. It's a business too. Tell me about the name. How did you land on Unstoppable Joy? What does that mean to you?
So I wanted it to be, again, something very positive and nothing cancer oriented and, you know, all the things. But at the time I was working with a gentleman on the logo, and my version of a logo completely was not what has come about. But like, we live at the beach, so I'm thinking it has to be like something beach related. And this young guy came to me and said, look, I lost my mom to breast cancer. So I came up with this. And he actually came up with the idea of the peacock because it means rebirth. It means good luck. And so knowing that I wanted the organization to not just be for breast cancer, I wanted it to be for all cancers because they all need that support. I asked him, like, then we started working together because I loved that. And it was also like, you know, something meaningful for him. And so this is everything about unstoppable joy. And so I had seen the words like unstoppable. You want something that's going to be fierce and going to give somebody that encouragement that they need. And we all need, you know, someone to tell us that we can be unstoppable. So, you know, it was just putting the words together. And joy, because the last thing that you find in a cancer diagnosis is joy, right? Like it's not there. And so I wanted to bring to the table something that's not there at all. And so that's how it came about. And to everything that is together with it, the name, the logo, it represents all cancers. It's good luck. It's like a rebirth. It's like you mourn your old self, but you're growing into this better version of you, and you're going to learn, and you're going to be the best of yourself after this, hopefully.
Yeah, there's so much power behind the word joy and the emotion of joy. I think that is sometimes the hardest emotion to feel, but I love it. And I love that whole story behind it. I don't think I knew that story. So that was really beautiful. And I also wanted to mention about Unstoppable Joy too, because it's so special. And I know firsthand it's helped people. But you created resources for both adult and pediatric cancer warriors and caregivers too. And I have to ask, like, what's a truth that you've learned that people seldom talk about when supporting children through their cancer journeys?
It's the hardest. As adults, like, we get faced with things. And I feel like, you know, as adults, it's like part of life, and that's kind of how it's looked at. But when it comes to, and I have to say the same about the animals, but when it comes to a child, like, they're helpless, and they're, especially when it's your child, but if any child, you don't ever want to see them go through that or a family go through that. You know, we recently had, like, with all of the joys, we have our losses. And so there's always been like losses of the adults that unfortunately we've lost. And then, you know, we had a warrior that we recently lost that was a child. And it's so hard. And I take it really hard because I'm in it with them every single day. I'm talking to them. You know, everybody that's involved in our organization, you become part of our warrior and caregivers families at that point. Like, we want to be there. We want them to feel comfortable to call us and talk to us. And so it's just hard, especially when it's a child. So we always, you know, want to make sure that child is taken care of. And then, you know, unfortunately, when a situation like what we just had happens, but we still want to make sure that family is still supported, because even though they now are not on that cancer journey anymore, they still need to be supported. And we're going to be here for that. And we are.
Sometimes more after than ever.
Absolutely. And that's what's so important, is that we don't just, we're not like, okay, you rang the bell, or, you know, you're done. Now you're done with our program. That's not how it is with us. We have some people on ours that are, you know, it's metastatic, and they're going to live with this their entire life. So they're on our program for that whole time. You know, like, we want to make sure as much as we can, but for us to be able to do that, obviously, you know, that's why I stress that we definitely need the support. But it's the most important that people know that we don't just close the door on them afterwards. You know, if they have been in our program and they've lost somebody, we're still going to walk with them and make sure that they're supported after that, because they need it.
Which is just so special. It just really is so special and so beautiful to have that support and those services out there. So then tell us, if somebody's listening and they have recently been diagnosed, or if they're just coming out of treatments, or say they're taking care of their mother or whatever the case is, how do they get the process started if they wanted to become involved with Unstoppable Joy or use their services? What do they do? Where do they go?
They can go on our website. It's unstoppablejoy.org. We also have a, you know, nice social media following, so they can find us on Facebook or Instagram. We have a YouTube channel. We do have like a wellness video that we can send out. It's in the majority. It's not in all, but it's in the majority. We'll be in all of the cancer centers, because I'm a very pro, like, let's have something positive as much as we can. So we have a wellness video that we have played out that they can watch. But we have a lot of resources that we can send them. And it's also good to note, like, that all of our services, some of them are virtual, because when you're going through this, you don't feel like leaving the house. So you can do yeah, there's just as much as you can do in the privacy of your own home, you know, while you're going through this, as going out in public. But yeah, they can find us on social media. You reach out to us, send us an email or DM me on social media, and I will make sure that you get set up in the program. And then there's so many ways to get involved. Like, we have ambassadors, which is how we grew so quickly. We have ambassadors in all of the states, and in some states we have 10, in some states we have 2. But it doesn't matter how many. It's about spreading the word, because that's the more people that know about us, the more people that we're going to be able to help. And so we, you can become an ambassador. You can become a provider if you are in a service that you have, you know, something that you can offer, a wellness gym, you know, whatever, at the holistic world. Then you can also partner with us. And it's literally, we're just growing a huge family to make sure that everyone, as much as we can reach, is supported.
Absolutely. Wonderful. So if you are somebody that wants to use the services, go to their website, send an email or DM on Instagram or social media and say, hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm a patient or a survivor or caregiver, and I would love some services. This is where I'm located. If you are someone that wants to get involved with the organization because this foundation really touched you in a different way, then still reach out and say, hey, I would love to get involved. This is the state that I live in. This is what I would be open to doing. Or just say, I want to get involved. If you are a company listening that wants to provide a service.
I was just going to say, it's so weird how you and I read each other's minds.
If you're a company that wants to provide a service, if you do Reiki, if you do virtual anything, like whatever you want to do, reach out and say, hey, we'd love to be a part of it. Again, no one's asking you to do it for free. It's not for free. You still get paid. And there's a great agreement between both parties. But if you are looking to give back in a certain way, especially now the holidays are coming up, or if you've just been touched by cancer and you're like, hey, I want to give back, this is such a beautiful way to do it. And like, I'm involved in the organization and I can say, like, you can do as much or as little as you want, but the support is there and you really help people. And I want to come full circle to this because, you guys, Tanya has celebrated 5 years of being cancer-free this year.
This New Year's, yeah.
Which is so amazing. I'm so honored. I'm so proud of you. I can't even begin to think what our world would be like if you didn't keep going and if you didn't do that sound bath. So I have such gratitude for that. But 5 years now, what's working well and what are you still working on?
Oh, gosh. What's working well is I have learned the powerful word of boundary, which is overused. But for me, it's like it's definitely there. And so I do practice what I preach. I tell people, like, a self-care doesn't have to be something that you have done. It can be something that you just, like, words. So, like, if you don't feel like doing something, it's okay to say no. You don't want to do it. And I do that sometimes. Like, I'll look at my calendar if I don't want to do something, or I just don't feel like that's someplace I want to be. I will say no, and I don't have to give an explanation or apologize. So that works well for me. It's like having my own boundaries and listening to my body and knowing who I can be around, what I can be around, and what I want to bring into my own space. You know, another thing that cancer gave me was it definitely threw me into menopause. So I'm fighting all of that. And so, you know, that's what's not working right now. And so I'm learning how to maneuver, you know, how my body's changing and all the things. And so I'm still always working on that. But I feel great. I'm happier than I think I've ever been in my life. And I think there's a lot to say for that. Like, for everything that I've went through, and that everything that, like, every day I hear this from people, it's like, I don't love what I do, but I know I'm supposed to be doing it because I hear that we help so many people. And so even though it's hard, like, every day I have to, like, have a check-in with myself and be like, okay, what do you need today to be able to be there for somebody else? And I definitely don't need anyone to be like, oh my gosh, Tanya, thank you so much. I absolutely don't need that, nor do I want that. I just know that I'm supposed to be here for it. And I'm grateful because I literally 5 years ago, I could not have been here. So I know that I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but it's a blessing. It's truly a blessing for me to be able to help somebody else, because to express, and I can to you, because, you know, we're friends. For a family to have to go through that, and I've walked that journey and you've walked that journey. For me, I'm a very empathetic person, and I never want another person to have to feel the way that I felt. So that's why we do it. And so it's I'm always trying to evolve myself and learn, and exactly what I say, practice what I preach, so that I can always be that best version of myself to be an inspiration for someone else.
Do you think you could have gotten to this place in life without cancer?
No. No, because I mean, sometimes you have to have a jolt, life-altering experience to have something like that happen. I mean, I was going, you know, we were, like I said, we were running a business, you know, going out with friends, all the things. And I had so many losses after that. You know, like I had family issues. I had friends that we lost because I lost my hair and they didn't know how to handle that. Like, you know, and I do want to touch on that before we end, that the most important thing I would say is, as much as a person thinks that it's, I don't know how to express and I don't know how to talk to this person because they're a friend or a family member and it's awkward for me, it may be. But suck it up, because it's extra awkward for the person that's been diagnosed or for a family that's been diagnosed.
If you're stumbling and you don't know how to deal with a friend or a family member that's going through cancer, this would be your advice to them.
This would be my advice to them. It's like, I understand that, but imagine how those people feel and try for a second to put yourself in their shoes and imagine that if it happened to you or your family, you would not want someone to completely just turn their back on you. And I don't think that people do it maliciously or do it on purpose, but it's uncomfortable. But sometimes, you know, you have to sit in the uncomfortable to be there for people, because people need support. People need support from other people. It takes a community to go through something as tragic as this. And we should all be there for that. And so that's why I also welcome, as you know, people who have went through the same journey to join us, because the more of us who share our stories and the more of us who are there to, you know, hold someone's hand or walk someone through it, the better it's going to be for that person.
Yeah. And you kind of get it and understand it in a different way when you've been touched by it through family, a friend, or whatever, or if it happened to you yourself.
Yeah. And you never know what a phone call can do. I mean, look back at my story, and if I would not have received that phone call that day, my life would have been taken a different direction than what it has taken. So you never know.
So crazy. That's so crazy, Tanya. That's insane. When you really think about it and break it down that way. But you're right, that the power of just outreach and community, when you're so isolated in something that's so traumatic, it might mean nothing to the person that's doing it, or it's no big deal, but to the person on the receiving end of it, it could be life-changing.
It could be life or death. Yeah, it absolutely. You don't know what they're going through or what they're feeling, and what you say to them or your encouragement or the support that you can give them in that moment can change everything.
And it's so funny, me and Tanya always joke around, because when we first met, when we first started talking on the phone, is how we met. I told her, I was like, you know, after my cancer diagnosis, like, I was pretty traumatized. And I really told myself and my whole family and all my friends, I said, I never want to talk about cancer for the rest of my life. I wouldn't let anyone take pictures of me through treatment. I didn't give a shit about ringing the bell. I didn't want a video of ringing the bell. I'm like, no one. And I remember my dad was like trying to like sneak pictures of me, and I like bitched him out. I was like, no, like, I don't want to remember this. I just want to go back to my old life. Joke's on me. And I remember telling that story to Tanya, and Tanya's like, oh, I never wanted to talk about cancer for the rest of my life either. Like, that was it. And now we're both here talking about cancer every single day.
Every single day.
And helping people every single day to get through like the other side of it. And I think that one thing that no one tells you after a cancer diagnosis that has nothing to do with like food or treatments or anything like that is just how much support you really need during recovery. I think after you do ring that bell and people disappear and the chatter of cancer starts to slow down, and the more and more time that passes from your last treatment, the more you begin to process, the more mental health support you need, the more trauma you kind of experience, the more isolated you feel because of the self-identity issues, because of the anxiety, you get fears of reoccurrence, you know, like all of these things pop up. You have scans and like you're feeling unfulfilled. You don't know who you are. Like these are the, you know, everyone thinks, okay, you're good now. You're all done with treatments. Like you're flat.
But you're not. You need support more afterwards than you really do.
And during treatment. Yeah, I agree. I don't want to say that in such a broad statement because like so many people are different. But I know for me, I needed that support after so much. And it was the time when everyone disappeared because they thought treatments are over. You're cool. You're good. You know,
well, you're good. Yeah. And I think we should clarify it. You need different treatment. Like you need treatment. You need support. Sorry, not treatment, support. You need different support. You need a certain support when you're going through the treatments. And then you need a different support after the fact. You know, because then you're like in a different stage. There's stages, just like there's stages of everything. Like there's stages of this. And so it's not just like, oh, you're good now. Congratulations. No, it's like now there's a whole other part of this that people have to figure out.
I know when I'm coaching people, and I coach survivors and preventers, but when I'm coaching the survivors and say, a week out of treatment to like 2 years out of treatment, you know, and so on. Everyone's in different places. And I say the same thing, right? Like it takes time and your nervous system has to relax. But the second your nervous system relaxes, all of the memories pile through and there's all the trauma. Like recovery is such a process and you're not alone in it. But just know, like, you're normal. It's okay. Be gentle with yourself. Even I'm 8 years out and I still have things that pop up. You're 5 years out. We still deal with things. But I think when you have the right tools, the right resources, the right community, the right services, you're able to deal with it in such a better way. And it doesn't feel as though cancer has like completely taken over, because cancer is not allowed to steal our future. That is on us, though. We have to do the work. We have to utilize and do the work.
Yeah, you have to do the work, and that is true.
It's not a lot of steal our future.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tanya, this was amazing. Let's close out here. What's one thing that you know for sure at the end of this entire journey in 5 years out? What's one thing that you know for sure that you can share with the audience?
That we should take care of ourselves. We should put ourselves first, and we should understand how important that is, that for us to be whole and to give ourselves to our family, to the outside world, we have to fill our own cups and make sure that we're good. So always listen in to yourself and take care of yourself so that you can be the best version of yourself.
I love that. I think that's so incredibly important. And I think everything you said about boundaries is so, so important, especially for all the people pleasers out there. So thank you. And you guys, I'll put in the show notes how to reach Tanya. I'll put her website. I'll put her social media. So if you want to get in contact, I'll put her email too. So if you want to get in contact with her, you have all of that info in the show notes. Tanya, thank you so much for coming on. You are just, you know, talk about pain to purpose. You just have transformed your entire life and community around everything that you're doing. And I think you should feel so proud of yourself and how far you've come. And it's only been 5 years. I can only imagine what the next 5 years have to bring. Yeah, you're such a beautiful person. And I'm so, so grateful.
So are you. This couldn't, you know, have worked out any better than without the people that we have. And it's through our team and the providers and just the community as a whole, whether, you know, in all states, like it's a one big family. And so I'm very blessed that the mission is spreading and that we are all coming together and to help other people.
Yeah, you're doing an amazing job at it. So many people are benefiting. We're all so lucky.
All right.
Thank you.